body?
What it do? What it do?
This is the AmeriMe Junkies podcast. Sitting in today is me, Salty Live 215, and Sadiqua Love. Hey, Sid, how are you?
I am doing well. I cannot complain about life, y'all. Actually, maybe I can a little bit, but I am alive and well, and that's all that matters.
Ain't it the truth? This week, we're actually going to be talking about, of course, it's still Women's History Month.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about women that work in and around the industry that we love, which is, of course, comics, video games, gaming, cartoons, animation, etc. And we have a few that we just want to highlight.
Yes. So
Sid, would you like to go first?
Sure. I have no problem going first. So I've actually been spending a lot of time over the past 3 weeks focusing on women in gaming and in esports. So I feel like I've been kind of in this all women's space for the past 3 weeks. And what's crazy about it, which I think is obvious, but there's so many facets, just like there's so many facets to being a woman. There's so many facets of being a woman in gaming. Well, a woman in gaming. Because there are women who work in the industry, like myself, who don't even get to game avidly. But those women still make a huge like impact on the industry itself. So I wanted to talk about, I guess, a director in the gaming space. And I say director because this woman is based out of is with the team that created, and I'm just getting excited, created Animal Crossing.
Ah,
so I wonder if you know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going with this, and okay. just keep going. Animal okay. Crossing is a very addictive and fun game series. It was one of the gaming saviors of the pandemic.
Exactly.
So it's
worth talking about.
Yeah, it is.
and it like I feel like Animal Crossing transcends generations. Like there are people who are like older than me who were young playing the other like older Animal Crossings, mm-hmm. and now we see like kids and still very grown adults playing like the new iterations of Animal Crossing. But I want to speak about, and I'm going to look at my notes, guys, Aya Kiyogoku. So Aya Kiyogoku is the first woman to ever direct a video game at Nintendo Entertainment Analysis and Development Group.
Wow.
And she started doing that with Animal Crossing New Leaf, which we know came out like a decade or so ago. Mm-hmm. So the first woman director at Nintendo.
This was during the GameCube era, correct?
Well, New Leaf came out. The Wii? No, New Leaf came out on the 3DS.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, not only did she serve as a director of the game, but when she was looking at the development team, she realized that there was not enough women on the development team. So she fought for New Leaf's development team to be 50% women.
Hmm.
So not only was she the first in breaking glass ceilings at Nintendo, but then at the very same time of her breaking glass ceiling, she made way for a whole development team full of women. So like, wow. I gotta give it to her because so many of us love Nintendo. We love Animal Crossing. And to know that like New Leaf, you know, is my favorite Animal Crossing game only because I haven't gotten a chance to play New Horizons. So until I get to play NH, I still will love New Leaf. And so to know that a game that I played consistently for about 5 years had an impact on the back end where women like were given a space to like succeed, it makes me feel like this kind of connection to the game even more than what I already had. So not only that, she was, again, charged with directing New Horizons, which we know it broke so many records during the beginning of the pandemic. And so many people have spoken about its effect on their mental health. But there was a study done, and if I can find the origin of the study, I will for sure, like in some way, make sure we can put it in a description. But there was a study that Animal Crossing New Horizons was like the number one thing that made people happy during the start of the pandemic. Out of everything else that was in the study, Animal Crossing was number one.
I have to throw the
And
joke in there. Somewhere
yes.
in there, had to be like OnlyFans and then like dude.
Facts. Facts. Do you know how many
Listen.
people like yo, like come on.
It's gotta be in there in the rankings of the things that got people through the pandemic.
Especially with people having this kind of income, like a lot of people lost their income, right? But then there were some people who saw more income than they've ever seen before, and they're like, yeah, disposable. Let me throw it in OnlyFans. So
And then the OnlyFans people were like, "Time to go get more bells at Animal Crossing."
okay.
It all comes right back around. See what I did there?
Do you know how many like Isabelle's like clad in panties and thongs made
Bruh.
money? I wonder how Aya would feel about that. But at the same time, I'm just thinking like Aya's like, yo, I'm making way for women. Nintendo, I ain't got time to worry about what y'all doing on
I
OnlyFans.
just remember when there was talks it was like so, it was something weird people were talking about Isabelle, and then this one cosplayer, Amazing Taco, did like an Isabelle cosplay, and everyone was like, yeah. And then for some reason that well not for some reason they that people were doing fan art putting Isabelle with Doom Slayer because Doom came out on the same day. So it was like, it's quite the combo.
And the one thing I like about Animal Crossing is that, as you're talking about now, Animal Crossing like crosses over into meme culture so well. Like you can take any series, any real life person, and attach something Animal Crossing on it, and it'll be a relevant, understandable meme even by people who don't play Animal Crossing. Ex
Like Mr.
especially
Rossetti.
after 2020. Wait, what did you say?
Mr. Rossetti.
I'm gonna have to look
Mr.
that up.
Mr. The Mole.
The mole. Oh,
Yes.
mole. Listen,
Wow.
don't judge, don't judge.
I just remember he when he shows up, it's goon time.
Yeah.
Like, you got my
Listen.
money?
It's what you, it's like, I guess I just wasn't thinking of that. Now, if you would have said something different, I would have made the
That's how you know she be living the good life in Animal Crossing. She don't even know who that is. She's like, I don't know
No, because I
him.
always think about, like, I guess I just think about Tom Nook, and then I just, that's it.
Everyone loves Tom.
I feel
Except for
like
Tom from
everyone loves
MySpace.
KK Slider, the
First
musician.
off, it's a cool name.
Right? Yes. And he got soul, okay? Secondly, outside of the alpaca that run the shop, which is so crazy that I can't remember their name right now because I was literally playing Pocket Camp like a couple days ago and I had to talk to them. But they also, I feel like people should love what the hell is his name? There's a skunk that sells shoes and he has like a fedora and he's so cute. And I feel like if you didn't have him, you wouldn't have shoes in Animal Crossing, yo.
There'd be no Air Forces
And
in Animal Crossing. No
there's
Air
like
Force.
something happens to you when you don't have on shoes in Animal Crossing, like you know, you can like slip and stuff like that. And was so if Animal Crossing really did have Air Forces, Air Force One energy would go straight to Tom Nook. Or Tom Nook would have Air Force One energy.
Well, see, you gotta be specific when you say Air Forces, because there's Air Forces, then there's
Oh,
Black Air
Black Air
Force energy.
Forces. Black Air Force
Black Air
energy.
Force energy
Yes. Not Air Force One. Air Force One energy reminds me of twerking.
Yeah, Black Air Force energy means you need to fuck up everybody's day.
Exactly. Basically. Like,
Basically. Now, I don't play Animal Crossing, but I have seen some beautiful stuff happen in their community.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember there was definitely a bunch of Muslim folks around the world who they were during the pandemic, so congregating really wasn't a thing, but they all congregated on one person's island to celebrate Ramadan together. Yeah. And I was like, that's really cool. And the game developers recognized it and let it be known on the little calendar, the Ramadan.
Yes, I love that. I love that. For me, I think about where the developers are and where the gaming team is, because I would assume that they're in Japan, because I, you know, obviously. And I feel like when you're in your origin country and you're making games that everyone plays globally, sometimes there can still be a disconnect culturally. So for the team to, like, recognize that and do the research.
There's a reason a lot of folks don't get the Yakuza series.
Yeah.
Because they thought it was going to be GTA, but as they play, they're like, oh, this is...
something different. Yeah. Like, that kind of reminds me. I don't know if Sifu is based in Japanese culture.
Chinese.
I thought so. But even still, some people don't understand that type of subculture within particular Asian cultures. They don't understand how hard it goes. Like, you think you got gangsters where you're from, and you do. But every gangster subculture is different, but equally brutal.
Yeah, the triads and the Yakuza are two very different sets.
I want to know. Oh, no, go ahead.
Don't get them mixed up.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to do that. I want to know what, like, Indian, like, gangsters are like, or, like, Middle Eastern, or even, like North African gangsters. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't see a lot of media, like, games around that.
That's a good point. Hopefully somewhere down the future we'll maybe get a chance to see more of that, and may it not be the stereotypes that a lot of folks have probably just sounded off in their head.
Yeah.
Like, those are Middle Eastern gangs. They're just called terrorists. Like, no, no. Pretty sure there's a gang set before you get to that.
Yes, exactly. And I think the closest thing that we get to seeing it in gaming media, and I don't know if this is Caribbean or African, is when you play Resident Evil 5.
Yeah.
And you're playing, like, the black against the black zombies. I'm like, that's as far as you get to, like, non-American black games. Like,
Resident Evil 5 is still one of the biggest "can we not?" I was like, all of a sudden we went to Africa and the zombies are faster, angrier. I was like, this is getting way too racist for me. Not only that, but then the physics of the game made no sense.
And it's like,
Redfield couldn't do a pull-up, but he could throw a black woman from one building to another. Make it make sense.
I feel like, and then having a black woman as the main character, I don't know if it made it worse for me. Because it didn't redeem it, though. Because I really do. Am I the only one who felt like I heard the zombies making, like, stereotypical, like, oh, type noises? Like, am I the only one who feel like they made noises that was this different?
Let's just all say that Resident Evil 5 has not aged well. And hopefully Capcom doesn't see themselves remaking that one in the not too distant future. How about they make a fucking Mega Man game?
Well, what's wrong with that? Sorry, you know,
that's my personal.
I feel like that would do very well because so many people
they abandoned Mega Man. They just,
as someone who doesn't pay attention to Mega Man, like, I understand the respect and the I guess the impact it has made over its community and people who don't know anything about it. So for me, it would make business sense to make it or to release like a whatever decade edition, you know?
Listen, I don't know what's going on over
like what at, is Capcom. What is Capcom up to anyway right now?
Fighting games that's
right,
and making sure they're good enough to do the esports. Outside of that things get extremely shaky, just like the way Konami, a lot of gaming practices over there get really weird. I still can't forgive Konami for how they did Kojima.
I feel like I was just talking or hearing about this. I was.
Yeah, they can't. I still can't forgive them for that. And then they tried to turn the Silent Hill series into a bunch of pachinko machine games. And I'm just like, anyway, we're veering off. We're veering off into dangerous, angry territory.
but this is good, right? Because it's like it's me and it's you, it's a woman and a man, and the thing is about it that we can go into conversation, productive conversation about it. You don't gatekeep over the things that you know, and I don't gatekeep over the things that I know. And
I want people to learn.
And so that's the one thing when we have like these discussions on women in these male dominated spaces, a lot of times women, they have to talk about things like gatekeeping and being tested to gain entry into the conversation. But as you can see,
you know what bothers me about that? And it bothers me so much.
Mm-hmm.
The misogyny that came out of gaming happened out of a pure, no one knew what to do in the late 80s, early 90s. You know about this, correct?
I don't know what you're talking about exactly, but
it's a weird little story. I'm gonna tell you. We're about to go. We're gonna be doing a break in a couple minutes.
In a couple of minutes,
come back, I'm gonna get into it. Okay. But it's dumb. It's really dumb.
That's strange because
go ahead.
Oh no, one of the women that I was going to talk about is a creator of a game in the 80s that was very popular, and I just wonder what her fame or lack of fame was like because she was a woman developer of such a popular game. And I don't want to focus on women in gaming only. It's just that my two industry picks are in gaming because I work in esports now.
No, but that's perfectly fine.
But so this kind of like once I hear about this sort of event that happened, maybe it'll make some sense of what that woman was dealing with. So I guess we'll talk about that when we come back.
Well, I don't know because I think I know who you're talking about. But my story is dumber.
Dang.
It's like it's dumb with the B in there. Mm-hmm. Can't hide it. Like it's that type of dumb. But seriously, we're having a great conversation here.
Yes.
We're talking about women in the industry. Yes. With the Marry Me Junkies. while we have a second here, we hope you guys are listening wherever you are. If you're on YouTube, what's up? How you doing? Make sure you're hitting that subscribe, that like button, and make sure you're clicking the bell. And we'll be right back after a brief little message. But okay, we're back. Mm-hmm. Stupid story.
Okay, now, I'm ready.
When the Nintendo Entertainment System was coming out in 1989.
Okay.
American department stores didn't know where to put it. So they put it in the boys' toys section.
Please help us. Please help us.
That is the literal seed where all the misogyny in gaming has grown from.
Please help us, y'all. Like,
I told you it was gonna be stupid. Did was I lying?
But why didn't it go into just overall electronics? Why didn't it go into overall electric? It's if it plugs in, and you can't use it in the kitchen and you can't use it in the bathroom.
Maybe because the first game was Super Mario Brothers.
If it got to hook up to a TV or if it got a screen, it needs to go with electronics.
But you
trying to tell me that they were so like
yeah they were bamboozled.
Oh my God, help me. Okay.
Yep.
I'm looking at my notes here, which is why I keep looking down if you guys are noticing. I just want to make sure that I have my notes up. But I wanted you to get into a pick of yours.
Oh, yeah. Now, my pick is Margaret Lesh. Now, okay. If you don't know who she is,
mm-hmm.
it's perfectly fine.
Okay.
Margaret Ann Lesh, she was an executive television producer in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 90s, she became the head honcho for the brand new Fox Kids Entertainment.
Oh.
And her biggest project that she spearheaded, she put her job on the line for, was X-Men, the animated series.
Wow, okay.
Because before then, she was part of a pilot called Pride of the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can find online. The animation style is exactly the same thing that you would see in the X-Men arcade game that people still love today.
Oh, wow. Wow. What?
Like, yeah, that X-Men arcade arcade game, mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a tie-in with the show.
That's awesome.
Like, the pilot didn't get picked up.
Okay.
And if you check out the pilot, you'll notice something very funny. The guy they have voicing Wolverine, ironically, has an Australian accent. And of course, Hugh Jackman, who played Wolverine.
Oh my gosh! Yes, that's it. But in the comic, though, that's like not
in the comic. Canon. Wolverine is Canadian.
Right, that's just, yeah. Like, I'm like, that's not.
I mean, even in the movies, he's Canadian. It's just the fact that back then they didn't know what they were doing. You know, they were like, yeah, give him an Australian accent. It's all right.
I'm starting to feel like the 80s and the 90s was like literally experimentation, you know, in TV and film and just overall media. Because if you think about some of the things that was created in the 80s and 90s, like consume media, like I even think about the song, like She Blinded Me with Science. Like when I think about 80s and 90s, I think about stuff like that. Creepshow, I think about like Teen Wolf.
Creepshow is hands down one of my favorites. But let me get back to this now.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, when I say a lot of people did not think this cartoon was going to fly,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people, even Stan Lee.
Excuse me. Oh, I wonder why he felt that way. I know this is itchy.
Because he had never seen when he saw that she wanted to take the cartoon in a more dramatic approach.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that was gonna be crazy. He was like, he's like the kids aren't gonna be into it.
Okay.
Because because for folks who remember, X-Men animated series was very adult. It literally didn't hold hands for kids. It definitely made, like, I loved watching it because it was like, okay, I watched, you know, Bugs Bunny and that's cool, but now to watch this series cartoon.
I can say that I feel like there was cartoons like that quite often, especially in the early 90s when I watched cartoons that felt like that. And it was actually very normal for me and my adult cousins, like me at like 5 and 6, to watch the same cartoon as my adult cousins and them have these deep dive conversations about it. And me and my little cousin being like, bam, boom, yeah, that was cool. But they're over there having like whole dissertation type conversations mm-hmm. about the characters and their stories.
Yep.
So then like coming up as a teen, those stories that we saw in the movies seemed natural to me, mm-hmm. you know?
And the craziest part was the production behind that first season was maybe one of the craziest things ever, because they put everything they could into the first episode. Like they banged that first episode out. It was done. It was ready. And Fox was just like, okay, mm-hmm. we'll show it. And they were like, whoa, we're not ready with the rest of it yet. And they were like, well, we don't care. And they were like, all right, so what are you guys going to do? We can have the rest of it ready in a couple weeks. Aww. So what are you going to do? Keep showing that first episode over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they did.
Wait, what?
But don't you know the ratings on that episode never went down?
What? Wow.
And mind you, the first what the episode heck? Literally ends in a to be continued.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. What?
So it was,
this makes me want to check it out. Because I like X-Men. So this makes me want to like.
Sid is on Disney Plus.
Oh, is it? That's what's on Disney Plus?
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus.
That's the one that, okay, cool.
It's on Disney Plus. It has one of the greatest theme songs ever. But it really pulled people in. It threw characters directly at you. It forced, me personally, I feel like it forced people to go out and actually read the comics. It forced people to go read the comics. It gave the show itself gave us a new character in Jubilee, and now Jubilee is an overall favorite.
Yeah, that's very true.
Jubilee was created for the show.
It's what's so interesting is that I feel like there was a time in Xbox history, like post Jubilee being debuted, that Jubilee wasn't talked about for a while, and then like kind of made a mm-hmm. comeback.
This is true. That might have had something to do with the X-Men, the Wolverine Jubilee comic series.
Okay. So I feel like I wouldn't know.
They were like a little team.
Because I remember when That's I was okay. picking up comics, I was trying to figure out like what comic do I want to read? And one of the things that I've said this before that turns me off about comics for me is that there's too many universes in one subject. Or like even when I was picking up X-Men and they were saying, oh, they want to get rid of X-Men. I'm like, well, I'm not going to like devote myself to an X-Men comic.
I just didn't want to do it. When Disney acquired everything and the division was there, it was just like, listen, we got to just get rid of it right now. But now it's back.
Yeah.
But now it's back. And now, as I was said, it's announced last year. Mm-hmm. They're bringing back the 90s cartoon. That's why it's called X-Men 97.
Right.
That's when the show ended.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
The way it ended, it was kind of messed up because Saban Entertainment took over and they like cut the animation budget and they sent the animation to another team. The last season.
You can tell that there was a change.
Sid, as an anime enthusiast, you can notice when the animation gets a little.
Mm-hmm. The same way you notice when the animation in itself just changes, like when it gets better, as time goes on, you get super excited. But when an anime's animation gets worse as time goes on, it almost feels like a slap in the face because it's like,
yes, it does.
I'm a dedicated fan. And all I ask is that you create a show that like is good for me to look at and doesn't like, you know, or I can appreciate consistent art. Unless you're improving the art style, or you're doing something that like represents a different story, can you please give us consistently good art? Pay your animators.
Right.
Pay your animators.
Don't skimp on the animation in the animation. Come on. It's in the...
Especially if it's not in the manga. Like, well, like, just a side really quick and about animation. Like, reading the Demon Slayer manga and then watching the Demon Slayer anime, anywhere it may seem like they're skimping on animation, they're actually not. They're following the attitude and the sort of funniness of the manga. So as a manga reader, you're like, yay, like, that is so on brand. But if you're like doing that for a manga that is like constantly fully drawn out and you're putting like little squiggly characters in space and in place, I'm gonna be disappointed. Like, why you even go there? You could have just left it as a manga for all that.
You sound like Shutsu Connoisseur.
Oh, you know, I love my anime.
This is not a full-bodied anime.
Yeah, but exceptions are like The Way of the House Husband, where they're telling you it's an animated like web comic or something, where it's an animated yes. graphic something. So you're expecting yes. these frozen scenes swooshing, you know, past your screen.
But the funny thing is, if Netflix and the studio behind it just put emphasis on, hey, you know, quirky slice of life animes are a regular thing. We can, like, if you give us enough money, we can just fully animate this.
Yeah, but see, the writer, the creator, didn't want an anime.
But and I respect it. Listen. It's very rare that studios respect what the author wants.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. For real. Yeah. And that's so funny. I was reading that. Yeah.
Sometimes the studio be like, cool story, bro.
And just doesn't. And then when it's in reverse, where it works out better for you, like with Attack on Titan, I love Isayama. I love Isayama. But Isayama is that quintessential, like, writer that creates as his story goes on, and it's not fully realized. Like, he didn't even know the ending of Attack on Titan when Attack on Titan became the biggest thing in the world.
I knew I was down with Isayama after like the second episode, because when I first saw the Armored Titan, I was like, you know, That looks like Brock Lesnar.
Oh my god!
And then lo and behold, Isayama was like, "Yeah, I'm out of the Armored Titan off of Brock Lesnar."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Do it!"
Yeah, yeah. And just the little thing, the little things that he finds inspiration in with the whole entire story. But where it works in your favor, where the studio is kind of not in agreement with you, is in Isayama's case, where he saw the anime play out and he's like, yo, I believe in my story even more. Like, my own characters make more sense to me now seeing them animated. Like, he appreciated and loved Eren more after seeing him animated versus seeing him drawn. And he's like, now I'm going to change his character a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's the rare.
I can imagine if he stayed the course with Eren Yeager, and we definitely would not have the outcome that we had.
No, I think we would have a more, honestly, I think we would have a more bleak outcome. I do. Yes. I really do. It's already very depressing. If I reread the manga again on Sunday, the ending, and I was in a very sad state all of Monday, just from feeling, because it like, when you're invested in something for like pretty much a whole decade, and because it's been out that long, and I'm just like, oh my god. But yeah, if he didn't see Eren animated, we would feel betrayed in a way even more by Isayama than we already do. But off of him, we're thinking about the women, okay?
Margaret, seriously, she hardcore trailblazer. And I wasn't being sarcastic when I said she put her job on the line. Because mind you, a lot of money was going into this damn cartoon.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, what if this doesn't work? She's like, I'll resign. She was like, I'll resign. I'll walk away from all of it. And it was just like, all right.
I respect that so much. That is something that I would, like, when I hear that, it makes me feel more empowered in my role as a woman in leadership, because I feel those anxieties personally. I have colleagues and people that I have connected with in my network who are even in higher leadership than me, who feel like every day the decision that they make, just because, like, it puts their job on the line. And that so many other people, like, their lives is kind of riding on their decisions. And I feel like women specifically feel this anxiety different, because we always feel like we have to prove ourselves, especially in male-dominated spaces.
Right.
So it was like, for her, it's like, I gotta get this right. And I believe in this show so much, I'm gonna put all that to the side and still do it. So that for me is like, hearing that story, it makes me feel like, okay, if she can, like, put her job on the line for this show in that industry back then, when you didn't have the advocacy for women.
And the only reason they really gave her the green light is because they just, another hit animated drama had started before them, which was Batman, the animated series.
Okay.
So somehow it comes back.
But she was strategic, though. She was strategic, because you got to sometimes you got to use what you got to get where you want to be. Look, before we go to break, Corey,
about the Players Club.
Exactly. I want to ask you a really quick question. Out of anime and all other kind of nerdy type, geeky type media, can you think of a male created female character that is impressive to you? She's not stereotypical, and she's a well-written character by a male creator.
Yes.
Who would you say?
I can't recall the creator's name at the present time, because it caused me to have a brain fart. But I would have to go with Tang Girl.
Wow, I was not expecting you to say that.
Tang Girl was one of my favorite comic book characters. Wow.
That's she's the answer.
Unconventional as hell.
No, I love it.
Mind you, it's the same animator. It's the same guy who did made the gorillas. So right now, that's like, I know the name. But
it's okay.
The one thing I do know, we'll be right back after these messages.
We're back. Yes, we are. Now, I know this is off topic, but when you were whistling just now, literally the song I sang in my head was Make His Pockets Hurt, which is so funny because we're speaking about women in the industry, and there is an industry out there for women who specifically look for men with heavy pockets, and their motto is Make His Pockets Hurt.
The sad part is... I was whistling the same melody.
Okay.
But a different song. And it's by the Ying Yang Twins. Oh.
So what? I wasn't far off, you know?
No, and that's the scary part, because I'm just like, wait, you're not wrong.
Yes.
It's kind of wrong.
I can't. Okay.
it's your go, dear.
Okay, so I wanted to, I have another, but I wanted to speak about this particular woman. And so I did a show yesterday, which I did this research specifically for this show. But the show I did yesterday called for me to use this research. And
Which we had on our page, so people watch.
Yay! So yeah, so when I was talking about it on the back show, I didn't really go into deep, like, thought about some of the things that I was thinking. But when I was thinking about this as a Black woman, this has nothing to do with this woman. As a Black woman, I was thinking about women in general and how they advocate for other women. And we know that in the woman community, there is still, like, racism and prejudice. And when I was looking at some of these people, especially in gaming, I was like, damn, I wonder if this woman advocated for people, women who look like me. But my final thought went to, if it wasn't for these women, regardless of their stance, there wouldn't be space for all types of women in these industries. So I just wanted to say that because this woman, I really respect what she did. So I'm just going to say a couple of things about this woman. I have my notes, so I'm going to read this. So not only is she an American video game programmer and an educator, she also used to work for General Motors in the 1970s. And then when she worked for General Motors, she was trained in assembly language programming. And she just worked on like all these really cool, you know, cool things, like physically building stuff that mostly guys could work on and creating like that digital programming on top of it for General Motors. So then she joined Atari's co-op division, and she was the only woman. The only woman, and she became a software developer and a software engineer on one of the most famous games ever, Centipede. Yeah. So Donna Bailey, literally born a year after my grandmother, developed alongside Ed Long, Centipede. Centipede is something, again, that crosses generations. My mom played Centipede. Does. My grandma, who didn't even care about video games, played Centipede. So, I mean, even if my great grandma was alive decades after Donna was born, and she was alive to see Centipede, and my great grandmother was born in 1920. But this was a time when people and kids, and they would go to arcades and they would play like these games. And so my great grandmother took her kids to arcades, and they probably played this game, which most people don't know was developed by a woman, and the only woman at Atari at the time. Like, look at how much she like did for women in the industry. And she didn't even probably get the fame at the time, because being famous for developing games in the 80s was already not a thing. So then to be a woman doing it was like, that's just my job. Yeah, but really you're trailblazing unintentionally. Yeah.
Game developers and engineers are just now starting to get more of the rock star treatment, if that's the right way to say it.
Yeah. And in a way, it's like, it's why I kind of love the indie scene.
Shout out to the indies. Oh my goodness.
Yes. I think what the indie scene does for people is it just makes room, it makes space. And one thing about my research with Donna is that she stayed in the indie space. She talked in the indie space. She talked and talked in the indie space. And a lot of people got to look up to her as like a mentor, especially in the indie space. And for me, that kind of shows how there are women of that time who were making space for all women and not just, you know, not just white women. They were making space for all women. And even in the indie space, I mean, Black creators can thrive in the indie video game space. I know that there's still problems and there's still hurdles that we have to work over. But when I see like developers like Riot making a Black lead character kind of spinoff of League, I think it's of League, right? It's called Convergence. When I see that, I know that there's progress being made on the racial front, because they know that League is something we might be interested in, but we need entry. Sure. We need representation. And I just
definitely
feel like
on the representation front. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That, Because so many white protagonists.
And so I really respect Donna. One, because she didn't make a game that even had a human, really. She made a game that was easy and accessible for all.
and looks cool under black light.
Yes. And it just...
Centipede under black light will freak you out. In a good way, though.
I think if you just think about Centipede now in our time, especially after the movie Human Centipede, you're going to feel a little freaked out.
See, I never put the two together.
Oh. But that's what I did, though. That's what I did. But yeah, so that's my little blurb about her.
You have such a devious little mind.
No, I just observe people, and people have devious minds, and I have to be on the lookout. So yeah.
I was being a good noodle.
Yeah, but Donna has lots of, I would say, accolades. I know in 2013 what was she inducted into? She's a recipient of Women in Gaming Lifetime Achievement Award. And I love that she would frequently speak at the Women in Gaming International Conference.
Yes.
So I love that as
well. Which needs more coverage.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my little.
So
yeah.
So the best way to say it. She OG, triple OG.
Facts, exactly. She threw up some gang signs. And the way, you know what? She probably had to put her hands in gang sign position anyway to build and create the things that she was doing. like, can you screw that? Can you screw that in?
Oh my goodness.
That shit was fucking rocking signs back in the 80s.
That's amazing. I thought you were gonna go with Donna too, because you gave a lot of hints, and I was just like,
yeah,
at first in my brain I was thinking about regular computer programmers. I'm like, no, Nazi,
no.
So
oh my gosh. But yeah, I have a black woman on my list, but I want you to get into someone else.
Okay, well, mine's is a black woman.
Yay!
And she's actually pretty known. She has one of the most distinctive voices.
Oh my god, we both are voice actors. Oh yes, that's our girl.
Cree Summer has been in the voice acting industry forever. Her first known role was Penny on Inspector Gadget.
Okay. Yeah, like. Do you know like how old I was? And I don't even know if you're talking about Inspector Gadget when I was a youngin, or if there was something before
when
that.
I was a youngin.
See.
But I'm only a few years older than you.
Yeah. And you know Cree is unproblematic, right? Because look at how she looks. She out here in no drama. Making waves.
Susie Carmichael.
Yes.
Max. Like she has been Elmira, which is still one of the Elmira still might be one of the weirdest characters I associate with her.
Really?
Elmira, for folks who might not remember. Yes, because, mind you, Tiny Toon Adventures was like a weird twist on all the Looney Tunes.
Okay.
And Elmira was like a younger female version of Elmer Fudd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who thought it was okay to imprison animals. And
like,
it was just so weird.
Do you imagine? Can you imagine? Like, I mean, can you imagine some of the kids of today watching some of the cartoons we watched?
Nah. Yes, no, but it all depends on the kids.
Because they have access to so much. They have access to so much, but you know, there's so many like I don't know what to call it, but there's just so many parameters around kids nowadays and things that we watch, which is good. But I just think some of the stuff we watched when we were young was wild.
It was. Yes, and now that adult animation is more streamlined, mm-hmm. some of that is just off the rails, which brings me to another one of her performances,
mm-hmm.
Foxy Love on Drawn Together.
Aww, I never got into that. I never got, what?
You have a twisted sense of humor at times. So
yes.
Drawn Together might be up your alley.
There's just there's always so much to watch. There's always so much to get into. Like I wish I could consume it all, but there's just never enough. Like,
no, there isn't.
There's never enough time. That's okay. If it's something that I feel like I can, because I've been actually getting through a lot of my stuff lately, a lot of my anime and my shows. So if it's worth a watch, like I can probably try to get it in there. But no, we got to talk about more of what she's done. What would you say is, maybe besides Elmira, but what's one of her more obscure characters that you wouldn't think about, do you think?
From Shaolin Showdown.
Yeah, I wouldn't remember that. And I love Shaolin Showdown.
She was the evil ghost?
That's crazy. I just didn't think about that. I just didn't think. You know how you just have voices that are so distinctive? And you don't, like, back then I didn't think about who it was. But, like, now I'm like, oh. Yeah, that's how I feel about some anime, too. There's another voice actor in anime dubs. It's a guy, and his voice is, like, it's that scratchy, like, voice. And it's like, yeah, oh, my God, he could. And, like, that's how he talked. And, like, you just know that it's him.
That's but how there's I feel some... about the voice. Sorry.
No, you're good.
My brain went to the voice of Goku, Sean Jamel, and then he could do that kid from Ed, Ed, and Eddie. Like, you dare mock the son of a shepherd?
I just can't deal. Everything that, like, that I feel like the character Goku touches, it's not, like, in a bad way, but it's, like, from the voice actor to the goddamn writer, there's always a tinge of annoyance, like, for me. Even if I respect it, it's just always like,
yeah,
tinge of annoyance.
I know. I trust me, I get it.
I'm just setting up my notes here.
No, it's all gravy. But yeah, she's literally done about 60 characters, at least, and I'm pretty sure I'm probably leaving out. Five or six.
Yeah, the type of the.
And of course, she was and of course, she's also a Disney princess because of Atlantis.
Yes. Why didn't I connect that? I literally just watched that like 2 months ago with my mom, or it was in December. What the hell? See.
I don't know. In December, it was all about the house magical. So.
Wow, was it that long ago that Encanto came out? Because it's still so fresh. Like, yeah. I'm still, we don't talk about
because,
Bruno, no. Like,
no.
He's still singing it.
That's because that joint, listen, that's because, look, side note, y'all, we have to admit, the music in Encanto just slaps.
It's good.
It slaps.
It's so good.
Listen, it just slaps. Of course, the song is better than Let It Go.
Come on. Yes. And I feel like Let It Go is still a great song in itself. But we don't have to reveal it. We don't have to revere it as best of all time. We can just say it's one of the top Disney songs. You know what I mean? Because it's really a good message song.
Oh, yeah. No. The message is great.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about Bruno.
We don't talk about Bruno.
It was our wedding days.
Yep. And even that, I love when they do all the harmonies together at the end of the song. That's like one of my favorite parts of the song.
But you know what makes that so funny? That harmony is called a madrigal.
Oh, I never knew that. That's so good. Oh my gosh. The movie is just even more beautiful with that. And then I think, what was it? Lin-Manuel
Miranda.
Yeah. He has said that he didn't even think Bruno's song would be as popular as it is. I'm like, do you not hear that song? Like, of course it would be.
But
it's probably better than like any of the songs in the Heights.
Right. But for some weird reason, my battery's dying and we're close to the end of the show.
Yes, we are.
So, Sid, it was so fun having you in.
Yay! Today. I know. I love this. You guys don't understand how much I love like doing like shows and stuff, and I just want my life to be set up where I can always hop on and be prepared. But it's still Women's History Month. I have more women in this iPad of mine that we can talk about again. So I got to give props to these women. Yeah, so we can continue this.
No problem. I'm here for it.
Yay.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, cool.
We want to thank everyone for listening in today. Yes. Of course, we want to thank you guys, especially out there on Spotify, iTunes, Anchor, and of course you folks on YouTube. Make sure you're hitting that subscribe button. Make sure you're hitting that like and hit that bell. Special shout out to CC the Geek from HBCUCon today. This week is her birthday. She was just on the show. Make sure you check the episode out. Big shout out to her. We hope she's doing well. And
she's doing big things.
Until next time, we want you guys yes, she is. And until next time, I would like for everyone to take care of themselves and each other.
See ya, guys.
So it's always a pleasure.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye, guys.